but I'll say we're extremely excited about Dylan. But I probably mentioned this a few months ago. Every player's kind of maturation process is different. So Dylan is someone that we look forward to coming in and challenging for a roster spot. But at the same point, we do not want to put Dylan Cousins in a position that he's not ready for. So, yeah, I think the underrated part of an Aaron Stahl in your dressing room, and if Dylan Cousins is on our roster, is just the ability to be with him every day and to learn from him, and not just, on the ice, but off the ice as well.
That is Sabres GM Kevin Adams. We've got his call with the media yesterday in our on-demand audio at WGR550.com. He hopped on a call after they traded for Eric Stahl, and we're going to talk about that in a moment with Matthew Collar. Two things to pass along. Good news on the coronavirus front for the NFL. They announced yesterday the virus, the testing results from last week. Over 2,500 player tests and only two players tested positive. Just now, this is from Adam Schefter from ESPN. The first results from the first game played this season came back. No positive tests from the Texans and the Chiefs. Of course, they had the Thursday night opener. So tests on all of their players, coaches, and team employees from week one have come back negative. A source tells ESPN's Adam Schefter. One tier three person, a groundskeeper, did test positive. He was nowhere near the players. That, again, according to the source for Adam Schefter. So more good news on the coronavirus front for the National Football League. Nothing positive from the actual first game that was played. 803-0550 to join us as we talk Bills Dolphins with you, but also we spent some time this morning talking about the Eric Stahl trade for the Buffalo Sabres. And we are going to the West Hur hotline because we love this guy. And he loves Jeremy a lot.
I don't want to be lumped in.
Oh, see, it's funny. Just so you know, he said he's only coming on because you were still part of the show. Like, if you weren't here, he would not come on with me. I had to remind him, yeah, Jeremy's still here. Why? That's the only reason why he was coming on.
Yeah.
Matthew Collar, who has his own website these days and a podcast covering the Vikings called Purple Insider, but talks plenty of hockey as well, as you know from his time here. Good morning, Mr. Collar. See, Jeremy, look at what Jeremy's doing to you.
Yeah, I'm glad that he's still on the show. Otherwise, I like Brayton too. So that would have been fine. I like talking about hockey with him. No, guys.
That's nice.
I didn't know that since I just woke up early for you guys that there was no virus tests positive for the NFL. I'm very glad to hear that. And I hope you guys and everybody there is staying safe.
We are. We are all, knock on wood. I haven't seen Jeremy other than a charity golf event that he was at. He's been doing the show from home. So actually, Matthew, if you were stuck here still producing this godless show, you'd be stuck with me and no Jeremy. So consider yourself very fortunate.
Yeah, everything is weird. I mean, reporting on the Vikings game the other day, unbelievably weird. I mean, US Bank Stadium is usually one of the loudest stadiums in the NFL, and it was dead silent. And even the pumped-in crowd noise was about as loud as having somebody playing music in a car driving by your house. Was about basically how it sounded.
Yeah.
I have never heard Aaron Rodgers call out his calls at the line of scrimmage before, so that was kind of fun, but it didn't help. So Everything is strange, but I'm glad you guys are doing well.
We got a Diggs question for you at some point, but I definitely wanted to find out a little bit more about Eric Stahl. So you've been watching all of his games the last 4 years. How productive was he? How would you kind of overall characterize his 4 years with the Wild?
Yeah, I mean, first I would start out by just saying that nobody can really figure out what the heck that trade was in Minnesota, because Eric Stahl has become a big win for them over the last few years. When they got Eric Stahl, he was looking completely washed up, and I think a lot of people went, okay, all right, I guess you just take a swing for a fairly reasonable contract when they signed him, and then he scores 40 goals at one point, and over the last 2 years, nobody expected him to keep scoring 40 goals. He had, I think, a 17% shooting percentage that year. Everything kind of went his way. But over the last 2 years, he has aged pretty well. I mean, he of course, does not have wheels. He was never fast even when he was younger. But he has that great length that he can make up for it. He's got great instincts that can make up for the lack of speed. And he kind of profiles as the guy, almost like a Joe Thornton, who doesn't have to be that fast, but can go late into his career and still be effective. And last year, there was nothing that pointed to, oh man, you've got to get rid of this guy because he's about to fall off the edge of a cliff. And I also would have understood it if he was really expensive or if he was a big old jerk. But he was neither one of those things either. Like, I know that your first impression of Eric Staal is that he's a big old jerk because of Carolina. But he came here and became, you know, a big part of the locker room, and you know, I thought was one of the guys that they would look to when, you know, times got tough, somebody with experience and the skill to be able to, you know, get them out of a slump or something. And, okay, trading him is totally fine if you're trading him for someone who's 23, but that's not what they did. So I guess I don't quite understand it, and I do think from your perspective, Eric Staal still has plenty to offer as a number two center.
Yeah, and that's the mission, is to have him be the guy basically behind Jack Eichel but ahead of Dylan Cousins, which, you know, for Sabres fans, it's almost like this is the only goal is not to repeat the mistake they made with Casey Mittelstadt that they're kind of still paying for and have paid for a couple of years. Matthew, with regard to Staal playing that position, power play time as well, I mean, from what I understand, he's someone that could help a lot on the power play. We talk about, you know, leadership and all that, but this is, you know, the leadership to me is the extra. The actual on-ice qualities seem to be exactly what the Sabres could use as well.
Yeah, I mean, you guys know Eric Staal, right? Like, he is extremely, extremely skilled, and that's a major part of it, of, you know, being able to maintain his success late into his career. And I think that that's what you see from a lot of guys who don't have that gargantuan fall off at some point. And when he had opportunities to play with really good players, and the thing is with the Wild, I mean, it's not like they had a Jack Eichel to play with on the power play if they put both of them out there, which I would endorse. I know that they're both centers, but I think you can put them both out there at the same time in the power play and have them whip the puck back and forth to each other. Because, I mean, there's just, I mean, you know this, guys, that drafting high, you usually get these guys who are more skilled than everyone. I don't know if we ever addressed that.
No, it never came up on the show.
But two or three or four times a game, Eric Staal does something with the puck that just nobody else is able to do. I mean, he makes blind passes. He has sharp tape-to-tape passes on the power play. You know, he can cross the goal mouth and have somebody on the other side tap it in. But I thought he never really got an opportunity here. And even with all the points he put up, to play with another superstar scorer, if you look through the other Wild scorers, you get a lot of, this guy had 20 goals, this guy had 25 goals. They pumped up Jason Zucker as if he was really great. He really wasn't that great, you know. So, yeah, I think that he is perfect to play with someone like, you know, Jeff Skinner, even though defense might be a bit of an issue there if they end up playing together. But yeah, having those guys on the power play, I think, would be huge. And that's another reason where you look at it from the Wild perspective and you go, okay, now you just lost somebody to put on the power play, because I don't think that that's Johansson's deal.
Hey, Matthew, with what Jeremy was mentioning about Cousins, so this is not just a trade to have him, you know, babysit Dylan Cousins and develop. He can be productive. They need him to be productive as the number two center. But what about mentoring a Cousins, or maybe he can help Mittelstadt? Were there young centers or young forwards or players that he kind of did some teaching with in Minnesota at all?
Yeah, definitely. And I think this is a point that, again, now you want to hear, but if I had told it to you a week ago, you would have said, get out of here. But, I mean, Eric Staal was just, let me you know, borrow cliche and say consummate pro when he was here. I mean, he came in to a locker room that was not in a very good state of the Minnesota Wild and played a pretty big role in getting them to be a relevant team, every single year that he was here. And I think that part of the reason that they didn't have a complete collapse, maybe they could have used it in a higher draft pick, I'm just saying. But he's a main reason why they didn't fall apart. And even if you look at this last year, we thought this team's going to be a total disaster because they changed a lot of parts out. They got rid of Nino Niederreiter. They got rid of of Granlund as well. And then Kevin Fiala emerges as the next star skill player on this team. And this was all with, you know, Eric Staal as being, you know, the leader. And I can't believe you guys also have not asked me about his analytics yet. I was just before, like, looking some things up, like, oh, I'm going to bring him some great stats. No questions about analytics. But if you were wondering...
I didn't know you were into analytics at all. This is
now
news
that you're
to
gone,
me.
Yeah, we know, say that I stuff know. Is for nerds.
Well, I'm still going to tell you anyway that even though he did not have a Corsi percentage over 50%, he had an expected goals over 50%, and the Wild had a really, really bad goaltending situation this year. So I didn't see in his analytics anything that says, oh man, watch out for this guy. He's about to fall off the face of a cliff.
I think it was Scott Cullen did a piece this morning, Matthew. I saw something about shot generating that he, although I guess his numbers were down a little bit last season, but he referred to Staal as an elite shot generator and a guy who could still drive the play of a line.
Yeah, and again, this is why it didn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the Wild are in a weird situation where, like, Matt Zuccarello is on the team. And you go, why is Matt Zuccarello on the team? Like, why did they sign him to a big contract? That was a Paul Fenton move that just baffled everyone. But, okay, if Matt Zuccarello is going to be on the team and Ryan Suter and Zach Parise, then you might as well keep the olds and try to bring in the youngs and put them together at some point, because the guy they're really excited about is a Russian kid named Kirill Kasparov. He's like a great KHL scorer, can kind of be their Artemi Panarin, they think, you know, or maybe even a little better than that in terms of an all-around player. So you got Fiala is young, Ryan Donato showed some things 2 years ago, had kind of ups and downs last year. Kaprasov is coming in, so you're thinking they might have this second core of players, and then the older guys leading the way and, you know, put it together. And now you trade for someone who, to me, just is not a real impact player at all. And then they say they're going to play him at the position where he's not as good. So, I mean, from the Sabres' perspective, I think it works out in a lot of ways and makes a lot of sense, because the Sabres have to win at some point, right? Or they just, I don't know what. Like,
I'm not sure.
Arena?
Yeah,
like,
I don't know.
What year do you get to where they just say, all right, it's no longer, you know, worth having a team if you can't win? But, I mean, it makes sense, though, like, to get a player that says, all right, it's time for us to win. We need more scoring. That makes sense. From the Wild perspective, I'm not sure I get it.
So this Diggs guy, you know, he looks good, man. I think he's got a shot of sticking here for a while.
Oh, I'm shocked. I can't believe it. Is that the Diggs question?
Yeah, you probably didn't see that coming, you know, on your Purple Insider podcast. You probably never made that observation.
Trust me, I did. I said, I think about 50 times it's going to be a lot harder to replace Stephon Diggs than you think. And the Vikings offense certainly found that out when they were down 29-10 in the third quarter the other day and had only had the ball for about 5 minutes. I'm not even surprised in the slightest. I saw that Josh Allen is being put in the Ring of Honor or the Hall of Fame this week after beating when you beat the Jets, really should have the parade. But, Stephon Diggs is one of two that made Case Keenum a quarterback that went to the NFC Championship. So, I mean, he has elevated every quarterback who he's ever played with, and quarterbacks throwing to Stephon Diggs have a rating of about 110 throughout their career. So, whatever he does this year that's really good, I'm not surprised.
Well, one thing about his opening day there, Matthew, you know, we'd been, I guess a lot of his highlights include post routes. He's one of the best in the NFL running posts, seeing the deep ball. And against the Jets, you know, they played a lot of conservative defense, I would think, at least in the secondary. The Bills they didn't quite dink and dunk, but we got to see Diggs working underneath, basically, and working in short yardage kind of scenarios. 8 for 86, a couple of big third down plays. It was kind of like seeing one version of the player they get, because he's not just a guy that obviously can beat teams over the top, which he can do. I feel like he was showing that other side of his game that maybe is not even really less sexy, but maybe less talked about.
Well, that's what is fascinating about studying his career in Minnesota, is because they changed offensive coordinators so many times and changed quarterbacks so many times. His role changed from year to year. So in 2016, he was a slot receiver. That was his assignment about half the time, and he was running quick slants and things like that, making plays after the catch. And then he changes to more of a deep receiver. And then in 2018, he goes back to being a short, quick receiver and only averages 10 yards a catch. And then last year, they completely overhaul the offense and have him just running deep posts, and he's burning everybody with that. So, I mean, it really says something about him as a route runner that when you talk to other receivers, younger receivers, and even veterans around the league, and say, who do you study as a route runner? The answer a lot of times is Stephon Diggs. And, you know, I thought just from watching him, there's a lot of similarities to what Antonio Brown was at his peak. And I know that we look at the fantasy numbers and say, well, Antonio Brown caught 130 passes. You know, Diggs isn't that. But fantasy isn't real football. I mean, you know, he didn't play with Ben Roethlisberger. He didn't play on offenses that threw to him constantly. So, you know, and I don't know if Josh Allen is going to be peak Ben Roethlisberger, but I do know that if you target him, no matter what way you do it, it'll be successful because he runs a full route tree. And there are very few receivers in the league who have the full route tree of being able to succeed at all three levels. I mean, there's probably only about 10 of those guys.
Well, 9 targets, 8 catches. That's a pretty good percentage for week one. Actually, for any week, quite honestly. Hey, thanks for coming on, first of all. We miss you. We love you. We hope all is well. And continued success with your work, with your website and your Purple Insider podcast.
Yeah, I miss you guys as well. And I think my state, people from my state are not able to travel to your state still or something. So maybe someday I'll see you guys again.
Even if they are not quarantined, we really don't want to see you that much. I mean, it's nice having you on the phone. I didn't need to see you in person.
I woke up really early Central Time for this, Howard.
Come on, you have a dog. There's no way you sleep in.
Oh, we've trained her to not whine until about 9:30.
Okay, see, I thought dogs were kind of like babies, where you just you get up early at some point.
Well, not during this. I kind of used to, but everything is just like time doesn't matter, the days don't matter. It's very strange. But
yes, it is.
I'm glad that you guys are doing well, and happy fall to Jeremy. That's how much I miss you guys.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking well
Beautiful.
Of you to wish Jeremy happy fall.
Thank you.
Going to be in the 30s this weekend for the low, so it'll be a wonderful weekend. Hoodie weather.
I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to say
I know. Hey, thanks for bringing up analytics. Love to your
All
wife.
Right. Yeah, thanks, guys.
Hi, Matthew. Take care, buddy. Stay safe. Matthew Collar with us on the Western Hotline, who has his own website now up in Minnesota, and again is the has his own podcast too, Purple Insider Podcast. Always a good man. Nice to have him on the show. Let's see. I have 2 stats I can share with you. I'm going to steal 2 stats of the day. Two stats of the day. One's about Eric Stahl, and one's about the NFL. Hang on. I got to get my Stahl stat. So Steve Simmons, Toronto Sun or Star? Steve Simmons. Sun? Star? Toronto writer.
Either way.
Covers the Leafs for one of the Toronto papers. Tweeted out something to the effect of how Leaf fans probably not happy that Stahl's
Toronto
in the
Sun.
Thank you. The Stahl's in the division, not happy with the trade. He's a Leaf killer, relishes playing against Toronto. In his career in the National Hockey League, in 49 games against the Toronto Maple Leafs, Eric Stahl averages basically a point a game. 24 goals, 51 points in 49 games against the Toronto Maple Leafs. I forgot, Brayton, I should have had to check Eichel's stats. He's got to average at least a point a game against the Leafs in his career, right? Seems like he does. He's productive against everybody, but I know he loves playing against the Leafs. So that's my stat of the day from hockey. Jeremy, okay. You mentioned kickers the other day, correct?
Mm-hmm.
You thought it was a bad day for kickers. Well, my friend, this from Josh Dubo of the Associated Press. Kickers missed in week one 19 field goals, the most on opening week since 1982. The 71% accuracy in week one, the worst accuracy for week one in the NFL since 1998. So it was not an illusion. It was one of the worst weeks in recent memory for kickers. They also missed 5 extra points, but one of the worst weeks for field goals. So kickers need preseason games? Or was it just, they had a bad week? It wasn't weather.
No.
So I wonder if that's, I guess, watch the kicking numbers for week two. I don't know if that's a thing where a preseason and these guys have to actually kick and pretend games to be ready, but the numbers were down. It was their worst week in a long, long time.
So here's your stats.
Openers.
Here's your stats for Jack Eichel against the Toronto Maple Leafs. 14 goals, 9 assists for 23 points in 17 games.
17, okay.
There's only one team that he's had more success against than the Maple Leafs.
Ottawa.
Oh, 10 goals, 15 assists for 25 points in 17 games. So
I would think he was a happy boy yesterday when he heard about the trade.
Probably
hope
was.
So.
You know, get a veteran guy in here, get some help at center.
Some solid, firm status-wise at the second-line center position for
now.
Yeah,
and a guy who, you know, like Matthew was saying, he's still productive. He could play on the power play. I would assume he wouldn't necessarily be on the first power play. I know what Matthew was saying, but more of a second power play guy. But whatever. He plays on the power play. He's the number two center. He can be productive. He can generate some shots. He can help his line mates. And he's hasn't dropped off the cliff yet at age 35, 36 next month. So that's one of the things we were talking about. But, of course, we're also talking about the Bills game against the Dolphins on Sunday. We want to hear from you. You can share your thoughts on the matchup. Ask us any questions, 803-0550. Reminder, be with us all day Sunday, 7 a.m. It starts with Breakfast with the Bills. Jeremy brings you game day at 8. Nate with the Countdown to Kickoff show at 10. It's a 1 o'clock game in Miami.
It's me and Nate.
You and Nate it at 8
o'clock?
Yeah,
the open it says, hey, here's Jeremy White. Now I was like, and Nate. Nate works the long shift on game
he's
days.
Because he's got overtime, too, at 6
Yeah,
o'clock.
He does a little show with me. He works with Joe. He does halftime, and he does the overtime.
Yikes.
He lives
the
for
it, the guy
though.
Likes Sundays.
Good for him. The weather, I was just curious what the weather's going to be like. There will be some fans in the stands at the stadium Sunday. High of 88.
Wow.
PM thunderstorm, 60% chance of rain.
In
Miami, right. Not here.
Goodness.
Yeah. No. Miami.
This is blasphemy, but I don't want any part of an 88-degree day right now.
Yeah, no, we're closing the pool Friday, so I don't want any 88-degree days either. I can't use the pool, so I'm good with it not being that hot. What was I going to tell you? Pulse Game Show, Shope and the Bulldog right after the game ends, and Nate Geary back with the Overtime Show at 6. That is your lineup Sunday, 803-0550 to join us. We'll get you your weekly advice in fantasy football. Scott Pianowski, Yahoo Sports, on the way next, WGR.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Stop looking at or thinking about the rough at Winged Foot right now.
Yeah.
I want to just lay in it.
Oh, okay.
You know, like laying in the grass is nice. This is just got to be like the softest mattress ever.
Could you make a Winged Foot rough angel? I mean, like, flat.
The grass wouldn't leave, so it would be tough. One thing about no fans, though, is if the gallery was there, parts of the rough would be stamped down, and you could hit it in the rough and get a lie on basically on flattened grass.
Mm-hmm.
There's
not
no
so
gallery,
much.
So there are no lucky breaks like that.
Have you seen anybody have trouble like actually getting the ball out of the rough, like flub a shot or only goes a few
feet? Oh, it's been crazy.
Feet? Yeah.
Yeah, there's a slow-mo video of somebody hitting the ball out of the rough, and there's going to be
I saw the slow-mo video, yeah. Like, you couldn't even see the head of the golf club.
There's going to be a guy this week that tries to hit it out of the rough from 210, and it comes out chunky, and it goes 30 yards and is in the rough again. Like,
right.
That's going to happen. The stuff you see at the British Open with Heather, I bet that happens.
Yeah, that's
some
what
of
I'm
these,
waiting for.
Some of these close-ups and the shots of guys trying to get it out, it looks like there's an explosion happening.
Yeah.
Grass flying, dirt flying everywhere. Got to swing so hard.
on our Westar Hotline, ready to... It's Thursday. It's 9:30. We're pretty close on time. That means we chat fantasy football with Scott Pianowski from Yahoo Sports. He is joining us right now. Scott, it is Howard and Jeremy. Good morning, sir. How are you today?
I'm doing great. And I want to go on the record as saying, I know this is a little bit divisive, but I love when the U.S. Open is impossible. There are so many PGA Tour setups where it's just too easy. And occasionally you see that at a major. I think back to the U.S. Open, Erin Hills, where just the scoring was crazy. Minus 16 won the tournament, and it didn't feel like there's a lot of tension in a lot of the shots. I hope if par is a winning score or over par this week, I'll actually be very happy. That's the type. I like to see the players struggle and have to hit creative shots.
The one thing I would say about that, I don't disagree when it comes to the rough. I want them to be able to stick greens, though. Like, to me, that is important. Way back, geez, where was it? Maybe Shinnecock a few years back, or I don't remember, because I want good shots to be rewarded. And if you hit in close to the pin, you know, these greens are going to be fast. It's still going to be tough. So I agree with you. Generally, it's not bad to see struggles and creative shots. I just want the good shots to be rewarded. And sometimes the greens can be such that it gets gimmicky and really bad. So
that's fair. I think that's what Phil was trying to do with stick handling commentary, right? Where, you know, the ball's rolling off the green and he decided just to turn into a buffalo saber. And, you know, he said, I'm going to be Jack Eichel for the next 10 seconds.
That was funny.
Yeah. Scott, I have a question, fantasy question for you. I was talking about this with Howard yesterday. You know, there are a lot of different formats, and maybe you can actually help me with this. The one undiscovered wilderness is the guillotine bidding process. What to do, because every league is going to have different guys available on waivers. Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce. You know, you've got a $1,000 budget in the league that Howard is supposed to be in. He's not, and our producer Brayton is.
Okay.
Travis Kelce went for $500 of a $1,000 budget. Mahomes went for $400. It's like the Wild West. It's chaos, and it's hard to figure out any sort of strategy. But at the same time, it's electrifying and fun. So I don't know, like, if you've got any thoughts on the guillotine rules to live by, or what can you do? Because every league and every team is so different.
Yeah, I mean, fantasy, I always say that it's all contextual is the assumed tagline to everything we say. Because people ask questions and I give an answer and then they say, well, wait a minute, in my league, it's different. We play this way, that way. And obviously the guillotine format and heads up just a nod to Paul Charchian, who I believe came up with that format. I've actually never played in a guillotine league, but I've heard a lot about them. And I think next year I might just have to play in one just so I can answer these questions better. And, you know, every once in a while one pops up on Twitter. But just speaking more generally about fab strategy and bidding strategy, I believe in the idea of selective aggression, that you can't be afraid at a poker table. You don't. It's kind of scary to think, okay, I might be going all in on my next hand, or I might have to make a really aggressive move. But if that's the shot that's called upon, you can't be afraid to do it. So I would, in a format like that, you obviously it's so specialized. It's kind of hard to give a great answer to it. But and again, I'll try to play in a format like that next year, so I have better answers. But I don't. The idea I'm going to hold back and I'm going to have all this leverage later on, I think that's misguided. I think if you see good opportunities early on in free agency, or, you know, like maybe in a regular league, maybe your running backs weren't so strong and Malcolm Brown was available and you think he might be the Rams feature back, which sure looked like that in that game against Dallas, I wouldn't mind making an aggressive pass for Malcolm Brown in a deeper league where I needed some running back help. We saw the Colts lose Marlon Mack. We know Phillip Rivers loves to throw to his running backs. Obviously, Jonathan Taylor was owned already in every league, and in his stock, he'd be a first-round pick if people were drafting today. But I made an aggressive bid on Nyheim Hines, thinking he could be like an 85-catch running back and maybe get 40% of those touches. And the funny thing is, I bid about 40% of my fab money. It wasn't even enough. Somebody went higher than that. But yeah. So don't be afraid. Selective aggression. If you think there's a good opportunity in front of you, remember, if you're right now, you get the most possible benefit. You know, people who picked up DJ Chark last year in week one, they got 3 months of fantasy goodness out of it.
That's the way I think about it when it comes to the free agent budget is, you know, whichever format, guillotine or regular, it's like you're paying for an extra draft pick today. and think of how much that could be worth to you, because, like you said, like 14 weeks of whoever this player is. In our league, Austin Eckler was in the guillotine available, and I thought, I looked at his average draft position and his average auction value and thought, well, it's probably exactly the same minus 1 week, or maybe, you know, you're down on him because of how the Chargers looked. But I like what you say about the just the general idea of what to do with your free agent budgets, because by the time you get to week 10 and 11, how many secrets are there? Every handcuff is scooped up, and the best you're doing is maybe trying some sort of daily play. It seems like the waiver budget conversation or the stress is kind of in the first 5-6 weeks of the season. Would that be right?
Yeah, I mean, what's going to happen is your strategy and the way you shape your bids is going to change. Your early bids, when you might throw in a big bid on somebody, is going to be based on what just happened and what's just been revealed. And when you run out of leverage and when you're not one of the teams that has the hammer later in the season, you won't be able to have the benefit of those types of bids, and you'll need to be more speculative. You'll need to be more a week ahead on things. Maybe you're looking ahead on the schedule, or maybe you're just saying, okay, who only needs one tiny break to have a major change in their fantasy value? And that's something I try to do every week right before they kick off. Sometimes it's a Saturday or Sunday morning. I try to say, okay, who's on my waiver wire right now who only needs the tiniest break before they could explode? You know, I know Darrell Williams looked very ordinary in the Kansas City opener, and Edwards-Helaire looked terrific. But you might ask yourself, well, what if Edwards-Helaire got hurt? You know, what kind of player would Darrell Williams be in that offense? And then obviously that's a very common fantasy strategy to have that backup. Yeah, Pollard in Dallas, interesting. Chase Edmonds in Arizona, if anything happened to Kenyon Drake. I mean, I think most people are hip to that type of stuff. Look at what Benny Snell did, who was not widely owned into week one. Connor got hurt again, and he's had an injury history. And Snell sure looked terrific. He came to camp in a lot better shape his second year. He looked kind of like a ham and egger in his first season, but it's a fair question to ask yourself, who is the best Pittsburgh running back right now? I wish I had the foresight. I actually had a couple of Snell shares in deeper leagues, and it wasn't that I had any insight on him. It was just the idea that maybe Connor could get hurt. But I was really pleasantly surprised at how good Snell looked in that Monday night game.
We're with Scott Pianowski from Yahoo Sports, our regularly scheduled Thursday fantasy football segment. From week one, surprises, disappointments. Let's start with the surprises. What really caught you by surprise from a fantasy standpoint after the opening set of games?
I'm not proud to say that I was thinking DeAndre Hopkins would need adjustment time in Arizona.
Really?
And
okay.
Maybe he wasn't. Maybe, I mean, he's a terrific player. He's been one of the best receivers in fantasy. I think over the last 3 years, if you add up all the points, he has the most receiver points. I mean, we all know he's a good player, but so often you see receivers change teams. I was wondering what we'd see from Stephon Diggs' first year in Buffalo, and he had a bang-up game. Obviously, Allen had the first 300-yard game in 6 years in Buffalo, which was nice to see. But I thought the idea in Arizona would be spread it around, and maybe Hopkins would be an 80 or 90 catch receiver, but not 110. And man, they just peppered him like crazy. So that was one thing I think I'm going to already take the loss on. Also, we saw a lot of running backs who we weren't sure if they would catch the ball or not. Like Jonathan Taylor did not catch the ball at Wisconsin, but they've apparently coached him up because he had six catches. I think it was Hines had eight, Taylor had six, and Mack, before he got hurt, got three. So Phillip Rivers somehow completed 17 passes to his running backs. And as anybody who owned Austin Eckler last year knows, you know, Rivers loves to do that. I was really surprised that Eckler only had one catch. For all these running backs who were getting unusual work in the passing game, you know, even Adrian Peterson, who famously is not a receiver, caught three passes in week one. But it was Eckler, who might be the best receiving back in all of football. He hit 20 touches, but it was 19 carries and just one reception. You know, Tyrod Taylor, as you guys know, a lot of times he doesn't like to throw those passes to running backs. They turn into Taylor scrambles. So you have to wonder if Eckler's PPR value is going to take a hit.
Flip it around. I know the Browns are playing tonight. There's a lot of talk about Odell Beckham. He didn't have – I mean, at least they played against a really good defense, but he didn't have good numbers in week one. Who were the most disappointing fantasy plays from last week?
Yeah, one of the toughest things to do, like with that Baltimore-Cleveland game, is you have to ask yourself, to what degree is this Baltimore's really good, and to what degree is this that Cleveland's in trouble? And I feel like when I watch Mayfield and Beckham, it looks like they just met 5 minutes before the game. There's no cohesion. There's no rapport there. You can see Beckham's getting frustrated by it. he did draw a couple of pass interference calls in that game, and of course he was open. People always say this, like, well, he was open on a couple of passes, and you know, Mayfield didn't see him, or Mayfield, you know, missed on the pass. I feel like you could play that game with every receiver who had a disappointing game. At some point, they were open, and the play didn't go to him for whatever reason. But I'm glad I don't have shares of Beckham. I'm not confident it's going to work. And the thing with Mayfield is, you know, he was at Oklahoma with Lincoln Riley and with CeeDee Lamb and Mark Andrews and Hollywood Brown. I mean, they're just set up so well to put up passing stats there. And even after Mayfield won his Heisman Trophy, Kyler Murray was the next starter. He won the Heisman Trophy too. I'm wondering to what degree Mayfield may have been, not that he's a terrible player or anything like that, not that he couldn't be fixed or repaired. It's hard to blame anybody who had to play with Hugh Jackson and Freddie Kitchens. I mean, those guys were so far over their head, and maybe nobody could succeed. And Mayfield actually did have a good rookie year. We have to say that too. But the setup in Oklahoma was so good. I think it's an open question that we have to say, how good really is Baker Mayfield? Right now, he's not in my circle of trust. And another offense I'm worried about, Drew Brees used to be the perfect marriage of volume and efficiency. And in the last couple of years, they've become more balanced on offense. Mm-hmm. He's no longer the 650 passes a year guy. You know, they want to run the ball a lot more than they ever did before. Now he has no Michael Thomas. He's 41 years old. I know the Saints won that game in week one, but Brees only averaged 5.3 yards per attempt, and now there's no Thomas for a few weeks. I have Drew Brees outside my top 20 in my quarterback rankings this week. I can't remember ever feeling that way before.
Wow. Hey, before we let you go, you are a Lions fan. So, man, we were talking about this week. Jeremy and I were both going into the season thinking, hey, watch out for the Lions. I think we even brought it up with you. Maybe they'll be good. Another blown fourth quarter lead. And as a Lions fan, I'll bet you loved hearing Matt Patricia say, fourth quarter leads? I think I had a defense that made a big play in the fourth quarter in the Super Bowl. It's good to be a Lions fan these days.
Well, it's an open question of who's going to be filling out their resume first, Adam Gase or Matt Patricia. You know, it's funny how many coaches are under the Belichick tree, and I think the only thing they learn from Belichick sometimes it seems like is to be antagonistic with the media. I feel for Matt Stafford because he did everything he needed to win that game without Kenny Golladay. He obviously threw the perfect pass to Swift, and I think Swift was concerned about his spot in the field. Maybe he was afraid he was going to be out of bounds or somebody was going to lay the wood to him, and he just, you know, thought too much. You looked the ball into your hands, perfect pass. It's frustrating sometimes. I don't think the Bears are a particularly good team. Trubisky did play very well in that fourth quarter, but he played awful for the first 45. I actually think the Giants plus the points are the way to go in week two. But Matt Patricia's, you know, some guys are hard to like. I know football coaches in general can be distrustful. That's why I appreciate it when somebody, you guys were so lucky all those years with Marv Levy, who's just, you know, wonderful with the media and a really solid guy. But, you know, Matt Patricia, for some reason, just views everybody outside of his circle as an enemy, and it gets kind of old sometimes.
Yeah, some coaches are like that. I think, I don't know, not to get into a deep discussion on coaches, but the idea of the media, and either you're for us or you're against us, and it's just kind of a whatever. I've learned to live with that concept. Well, I hope you have a good, productive fantasy weekend, Mr. Pianowski. You can follow Scott, by the way, on Twitter, @Scott_Pianowski, and you can read his work at Yahoo Sports' website, sports.yahoo.com. Thank you, as always, for giving us some time on the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, Scott, stay safe. We'll have Extendo Sports coming up, get you an update on the U.S. Open leaderboard. Got some things to watch tonight in the world of sports. We'll do that in a moment. Instigators, we'll talk more about the trade for Eric Staal. That is coming up at the top of the hour on WGR.
The show is over at 10, but we never stop talking. Tweet us anytime. Howard and Jeremy, WGR Sports Radio 550.
Oh, my. Davis Thompson, amateur, leads the U.S. Open right now, 3-under. Brandon Wu, 2-under. Rory McIlroy, Corey Connors as well.
Last minute of play in the show.
Islanders Lightning, you got a lot on the agenda tonight. Islanders Lightning at 8. You've got Miami-Boston at 7, game 2 of the NBA Eastern Final. You've got Thursday Night Football at 8:20, Cleveland and Cincinnati. You get to watch Joe Burrow and Baker Mayfield. If you can't make it to a TV, we got the game here on the radio on WGR. That's all I got. You got anything else we didn't get to today? I think I've got everything that I wanted to get in. And you got U.S. Open going on all day. So watch all that, too.
I plan to watch a bunch of it.
And then tomorrow's Football Friday. So join us. We'll get you all hyped up and pumped up and crazy for Sunday's matchup between the Bills and the Dolphins. Sal, Murph, Sean McDermott, Scaff, and much more. So in the meantime, have a wonderful day. Eric Staal, the big trade for the Sabres. They'll be talking about it next with the Instigators on WGR.